opportunity to welcome everyone in this meeting, members from the portfolio and the Select Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, the department from Justice, the DG from the Justice Department, and the DG from the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, the researchers that are here with us, and all the guests that are also in here. You are all welcome to this joint meeting. The meeting that is taking place here is about the briefing from the Department of Justice. On the response on the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act, and also on the from the reports gathered from the public on the oversight that was overtaken by the committee as well. Without waste of time, we are going to give this opportunity to the Department of Justice, and we will request, because we are already behind time, we are not going to go through introductions, but we will allow each and everyone, whenever you speak, just to say who you are, so that we know we are talking to. I will then allow the department to take us through. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Honorable members, my name is Nongulule Boshinda, DG, Justice and Constitutional Development.
Before you proceed, let me just say that, as I've already indicated, that this is a joint meeting. Unfortunately, the chairperson from the Select Committee couldn't be with us due to another commitment in the Gauteng province.
Thank you very much, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. The presentation that we are going to provide to the Honourable House is to first highlight the manner in which we operate as government, but in particular the Department of Justice, Constitutional Development, the police, NPA, Legal Aid South Africa, and other departments that are directly relevant in the execution of the work that emanates from the Domestic Violence Act. But we are not only going to limit ourselves to that, we are also going to try and address the committee on some of the work that we do in relation to the implications and the impact of what happens in a family or in a home that is subjected to domestic violence. Particularly to children and sometimes to older persons. So we take the whole portfolio of vulnerable groups in approaching this presentation, naturally focusing on domestic violence, because that's the subject for the day. What we thought we would do in this Honourable House permission is I will do just a broad presentation. There were specific questions that were asked by this Honourable House to the department, or from the department, which questions we have already responded to. If time permits and the chair permits that we do this, we will then go through the questions specifically. But if you allow me to just do a broader synopsis of how we work, and then we can go through the questions that we are specifically. Thank you. The context of the presentation includes, amongst others, the review. We review the progress in the fight against crime, particularly and the government's role in dealing with the gender-based violence, in particular domestic violence. We report on the implementation of relevant key international protocols, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, as well as the domestic legislation, including the Domestic Violence Act. We inform the Senate Committee on the management and governance structures put in place to deal with these issues of vulnerable groups, particularly domestic violence. And then we deal with the implementation challenges as well as the initiatives relating to the domestic violence as well as gender-based violence. And then we will submit a conclusion for discussion. Firstly, we want to thank this Honorable House for having invited us to come and make this presentation. It is important to us that we are able to do so and give the committee the sense of where we are. We are doing this presentation within the context of the broader cluster, which is the justice, crime prevention and security cluster, that has been given a mandate to achieve the goal of outcome 3 of the priorities of government, which is namely all people in South Africa are and feel safe. It is within this regard that the JCPS cluster has put in place certain measures to help deal with gender-based violence as well as domestic violence, such as the establishment of the following framework and governance structures. Within the JCPS cluster, we have the JCPS Domestic Violence Task Team, which is led by this government. We have an intersectoral steering committee on sexual offences, which is chaired by the department, particularly myself. We have the Joint Task Team on Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transsexual, which is also chaired by the Department of Justice. While there hasn't been too much work in detail that we will be able to discuss with this committee, we, however, have done some work that we are happy to share with the committee at this stage in relation to the issue of the LGBTI. And then we'll deal with the Interdepartmental Management Team on Sexual Offences, chaired by the National Prosecuting Authority, and then the Victim Empowerment Management Forum, including the victims of domestic and other gender-based violence, which is chaired by the Department of Social Development. In addition, the cluster departments are collaborating with the National Department of Women, Children, and People with Disabilities, who has recently been established, of course, as a department, but also that department has established the Gender-Based Violence Council. I think it is important for the committee to note that the current body of legislation, whether it's the Domestic Violence Act, whether it's the Sexual Offences Act, whether it's the Child Justice Act, or even the Children's Act, at this stage, when the Department of Women, Children and People Living with Disabilities was established, the legislation was already in place. So what we've done is we've recognized that they were supposed to have been included in the legislation, but the department was not in place at the time. So they form part of the steering committees that we participate in dealing with these issues. In addition to this mandate, just as additional information, we work very closely, extremely closely with the Department of Education, the Department of Health, which department provides a very specific service to the Department of Justice in the Western region. The Republic of South Africa is a signatory, as you know, and has ratified the following key international instruments: the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Convention of the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the United Nations Convention on Rights of the Child, the Optional Protocol on the Sale of Children, Child Trafficking and Child Pornography, Violence Against Women, Migrant Workers, the Resolution 48 of 110 of the United Nations General Assembly of 1993, the Beijing Declaration and its Platform of Action of 1995, the Protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the Rights of Women in Africa of 2003, as well as the Further Protocol on Gender and Development. Very shortly, we will be finalizing a report which has to be submitted to the United Nations Country Report, which will be dealing with the human rights and the status of human rights, which also deal with that we are dealing with in this House today. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa gives us a baseline as follows. Section 9 of the Constitution provides that no person may unfairly discriminate directly or indirectly against anyone or more on the grounds, including gender, sex, sexual orientation, pregnancy, and disability. So this is where we take our mandate from. It also provides in Section 10 that everyone has inherent dignity and the right to have their dignity respected and protected. And then in Section 11, it provides that everyone has the right to life. Section 12 provides that everyone has the right to freedom and security of person, which includes the right to be free from all forms of violence from either public or private sources, and not to be treated or punished in a cruel, inhumane, and degrading manner. Everyone has the right to bodily and psychological integrity, which includes the right to make decisions concerning reproduction, as well as to security in and control over their own body. Now, if that is the mandate that the department, as well as the broader government, must adhere to, we have had to put in place several mechanisms to ensure that we give effect to that directive that is, or the injunction that the Constitution put on us. Some of the legislative instruments that are already in place is the Domestic Violence Act of 1998, implemented on the 1st of November 1999. As you know, this legislation has a number of areas that have been identified as areas that require amendments. In the parliamentary program for legislation, we will be bringing amendments to the Domestic Violence Act during or about June 2012. That's according to the program of work. So we are hoping that issues that are going to come out of here and issues that had arisen in the previous consultations with this Honourable House and other committees of the Honourable Parliament will then be enhanced and incorporated in the amendments. The amendments have largely been drafted, but naturally the space to continue to make input into those amendments continues to exist until the amendments are introduced formally into Parliament. We have the Criminal Law Amendment Special Offences and Related Matters, which is the legislation that was implemented from December 2007. We also believe that this legislation is very useful in addressing issues of domestic violence because it's not only limited to other sexual crimes, but it's domestic violence, or people within who experience domestic violence also are covered by the Criminal Law Special Offences Act. We have the Protection from Harassment Act of 2011, which will be implemented effectively from March 2012. The Children's Act of 2005, which was implemented on the 1st of April 2010. The Older Persons Act of 2006, which was also implemented in April 2010. The Child Justice Act of 2008, which was also implemented on the 1st of April 2010. The Prevention and Combating of Trafficking Persons Bill is at present currently being deliberated upon by the Portfolio Committee. From, I think, the intensive deliberations took place from October last year to early this year, we are hoping that that bill will be finalized soon. I may wish to pause here, Chair, and just indicate some of the broader areas that I think we need as government to enhance our effectiveness on is that each of the pieces of these legislations, particularly the Children's Act, the Child Justice Act, the Older Persons Act, the Prevention of Combating of Trafficking, are very human-intensive, absolutely thoroughly human-intensive. What that means is that they need a lot of interaction. They need a lot of working together, particularly on an intersectoral basis, which is why we are using currently, as we speak, the Intersectoral Committee on Child Justice, as well as the Intersectoral Committee on Sexual Offences, to integrate the work that we do between all the cluster members as well as those departments that are not necessarily the CPS cluster members. What this also means is that the responsibilities that are imposed by this legislation are such that they require a lot of people on the ground, physical human beings that must be on the ground and who must catch a report, who must catch a statistic, who must ensure that a report was submitted on time. I'm sure you would have read sometime last year about some of the reports that came out because of the presentations we as the Department of Justice did, where there was a lot of complaints that our statistics is not that reliable in so far as issues of sexual offences are concerned. We are working on that, but naturally, as I've indicated, it needs a lot of resources to ensure that this, our statistical base is quite correct. And we hope to be working together with our partners to ensure that the collection of the data is accurate and timely. The implementation of Domestic Violence Act of 1998 is important in that this act now provides for the provision and enforcement of the interim and final protection orders for all victims of domestic violence, where victims previously had to follow the civil process and lay criminal charges in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act of 1997. Now, there were a number of questions that were raised around the practical implementation of the Domestic Violence Act, which we seek to, amongst others, address in this part of the presentation. Part of the question was asking us how many, if any, are institutions that provide support and care to victims of domestic violence. Currently, generally all police stations that are currently being built or the ones that have been built in the recent past are built with victim-friendly rules, and I think right now we are sitting at slightly over 900, but I think the official statistic is still 900 victim-friendly rules that exist countrywide. They are not really sufficient, but we believe that with the growth in this number, in fact, one of the requests that were made by the police in terms of the parafunding was to increase the number of victim-friendly rooms in police stations, and we hope that in the near future they will be considered favorably for that. There are 27 tutuvela care centers throughout the country that are operational, that are currently run by the National Prosecuting Authority, and we believe that the tutuvela care centers are running exceptionally well. These are now formal tutuvela care centers that are rendering all services that the tutuvela care center must render in terms of the protocol. However, there are additional tutuvela care centers, probably around 25, that are rendering some services but not all services. So we have a total body of about 40 tutuvela care centers that are rendering general services and specific services to victims in part of domestic violence. But it must be clear in this house that the tutuvela care centers that are there do not only deal with matters of domestic violence, they also deal with matters of rape and other issues which are not necessarily arising from a domestic environment. There are 385 magistrate courts throughout the country, and each one of these are classified as domestic violence courts in terms of Section 1 of the Domestic Violence Act. Social Development has 60 shelters countrywide for victims of domestic violence, as well as 42 places of safety and 254 children's homes for children in need of care and protection. I said earlier that some of the impact of domestic violence is generally felt by children, and we do pick this up in terms of the Child Justice Act, and so some of the facilities that currently exist in terms of the Child Justice Act also contribute to provide additional care to those children who may be offending as a result of being victims themselves of domestic violence. Dedicated services established and available. Legal Aid South Africa, who are also present in this meeting, provide tax-funded toll-free legal advice to indigent persons in civil matters, including domestic violence cases, and legal representation is also available in domestic violence cases in terms of legal aid South Africa policy, where they is married and the other party is legally represented. So it's important that we understand that previously, I mean, the people who were victims of domestic violence did not have access to legal aid. It was only in the recent past that legal aid is playing a very critical role, and we are very grateful to Legal Aid South Africa for that. Legal aid is also granted to a child in a domestic violence to protect the interests of that child. Legal aid may also be provided to LGBTI persons in equality court cases. Other dedicated services at court level from 2010 to 2011 include 224 child witness testifying rooms, which are currently functional and operational, 324 CCTVs seated in courtrooms, and 49 one-way mirrors seated in courtrooms. And the one-way mirrors are very useful, and I think they respond to a question that was raised, whether it is possible to separate the perpetrator from the victim in a court environment. And we are saying in some instances it is possible where courtrooms are already fitted with this infrastructure. Naturally, it is quite clear that if there are 49 courtrooms that are fitted with one-way mirror, we are far from where we should be if you think that we have 385 magistrates for. So there is a lot of work, there is a lot of infrastructure that still needs to be put in place. In collaboration with the Department of Correctional Services, the 324 CCTVs that are currently seated are also assisting us in ensuring that the victim and the perpetrator sometimes are not put in the same room, because the perpetrator may be sitting in correctional facilities but give their evidence through the CCTV from time to time, and that does help to Department of Justice and Constitutional Development initiatives in terms of the JCPS cluster. The department has developed the domestic violence strategy. We've been speaking about the strategy. The strategy has not been presented as yet, but we are hoping to present the strategy to the JCPS cluster very shortly. What the strategy is seeking to clarify, it's seeking to clarify the roles, it's seeking to clarify the intersectoralness of the roles between various departments, particularly because the current domestic violence act focuses its responsibilities primarily to the Department of Justice, to NCA, as well as to SARS, but leaves out the rest of the intersectoral members of the intersectoral committee. And we believe that those members have to be included. So what this strategy then seeks to do is to bring those members in before the legislation is actually amended. Development of the prevention strategy. In the current draft strategy on domestic violence that the department has worked on, there is a chapter that we believe is missing, and we've asked for a limited time to work on that chapter, which is the chapter on prevention. That chapter on prevention is not just going to come from nowhere. We are pulling on the number of strategies that currently exist in government and pulling them together and making them a chapter in the strategy for domestic violence, in dealing with domestic violence. One of the questions that was raised as well was whether, in fact, we are reaching disabled people in terms of communicating not just the issues of domestic violence or the issues of vulnerable groups, but broadly the issues of justice. We can't say with comfort that we are reaching everybody, but we can say that we are having initiatives in place to ensure that we do reach people who are living with disabilities as we speak. Currently, we are developing a lot of awareness raising material that is going to come out in Braille, which awareness raising material has already been in place for a reasonable period for other people who are able to read and are not visually impaired. But for the visually impaired, they have been left out. education directs us to. Specialized training, which is currently undertaken by Justice College as well as the MPA for domestic violence, continues to be undertaken. We'll speak to the numbers of training when Mrs. Fox then speaks to the specific questions that we raised much earlier. The Department of Social Development Initiative, currently the Department of Social Development has 42 places of safety, which are currently available countrywide, where a total of 1,686 children are being temporarily housed. Not all those children come from domestic violence households. However, most of them would, and therefore it's important that we understand that. 254 children's homes countrywide, where a total of 13,835 children are placed for at least 2 years in terms of the Children's Act, because they are deemed to be children in need of care. And then 60 shelters available countrywide, where a total of 1,934 vulnerable persons, including women and children, are being temporarily housed. During last year specifically, we had a lot of police visibility because of the 2010, not last year, the year before, because of the 2010 World Cup. But that has helped us quite tremendously because that number of police contingents already exists, and we believe that it is making police visibility now a little more visible than probably many years before. So this is a legacy of the World Cup that we as the JCPS cluster are beginning to benefit from. As already indicated, 900 victim-friendly rooms currently exist within the police environment. Currently, SAB has 1,124 police stations, not including satellite police stations and contact points where cases can and are reported. Police are being trained to deal with such cases. Type of training which the police are currently undergoing wherever this training happens is social context and gender sensitivity training, which is generally a 5-day domestic violence learning program for the police personnel. Within the MPA environment, training of prosecutors by SOCA, which is a division of MPA that is running amongst other the City Gala Care Centers, as well as other issues of vulnerable groups and domestic violence. The Ndabezitha training program with traditional leaders is a program that we are currently having. It's a program that has not been in existence for a long time, but we believe that issues of domestic violence as well as issues of vulnerable groups not only affect us, but they happen within the environment where traditional leadership exists, and we are excited about this initiative. And at this stage, I won't repeat the issue of the Tutuzela Center because I've already dealt with. Only to elevate that during 2010-2011 financial year, 20,496 victims were assisted at 45 sites. As I had already indicated, that there are these sites that are also offering part of services that are offered by the 27 Tutuzela Care Centers. During the 9 months until December 2011 of the 2011-2012 financial year, 20,377 victims were assisted at 52 sites, of whom 985 were domestic violence-related methods. Now, there are those areas that are domestic that give rise to domestic violence in one way or the other, but that are not necessarily within the full domain of the JCPS cluster, because our responsibility is to ensure safety of people in South Africa. However, there are these areas that are very big in contributing to the feeling of safety or lack thereof. One of those areas is unemployment, and it is statistically proven that where there is high unemployment, there is less stability and peaceful coexistence of people. Education is one of those areas that is also a big issue. We are interacting naturally with the Department of Education, but certainly it's one area that needs to be addressed. the issue of social grants, the Department of Social Development is a member of the JCPS cluster. We deal with issues of social grants quite extensively and the challenges associated with that. But it is an area that has to be considered as we move forward, how, because it has assisted very greatly in ensuring that it pulls a huge net of South Africans out of the poverty net. But it has some other unintended consequences where children then start attacking their mothers and grandmothers because of the social grant, and those are things that we deal with as a JCPS cluster. Infrastructure is also one of those areas where generally domestic violence happens in homes, and if there's no infrastructure for the police to get there quickly, those issues then become a problem. Included in the infrastructure naturally is transport and to a certain extent hospitals. There is a multi-cluster approach that is in place, but there needs to be an enhancement of that multi-cluster approach as we move forward. We are meeting on a joint cluster basis with the social cluster as well as the economic cluster to try and address some of the issues that we've raised, but we need to work a little more closer as we move forward to ensure that we move with speed in addressing particularly issues of infrastructure, transport, as well as medical care. Collaboration, therefore, with the Gender-Based Violence Council under the chair of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities is also important, and we do make our contributions and we continue to be engaged in that process. There have been some notable successes that we have achieved since the Domestic Violence Act came into being in 1998. The establishment of the governance structures to ensure coordinated response and joint monitoring and performance is one of those successes. I must indicate that these governance structures on the one level, they work, I think, quite successfully at national level, but at local level, we do need to do a lot more work to ensure that we pull them in the manner that they do at national level. The development of a family law practice learnership, which is a course that is SACA approved, it's a SACA qualification, number 50265, that provides three specific unit standards for domestic violence at NQF 5 and 6, and having a credit of 32. Our view is that there is a need for ongoing learning, but there is also a need of recognition for those people who have undergone training. And generally, when they know that they have credits that they receive in undergoing these courses, it gives them, it invigorates them to be able to do and perform better. I have already spoken to the issue of developing a grade booklet on domestic violence, and this work is really prioritized so that it's not going to solve all our problems, but it's going to begin to make information available to those who are visually impaired. Development of integrated case management system for domestic violence to track domestic violence cases from entry to the time each case is finalized. And one of the questions that was raised by this Honourable House is, are we able to track cases? Why is there such a low level of prosecution in domestic violence cases, and what are we doing about that? And why are so many cases withdrawn, and what are we doing about that? Through the integrated case management system, we are hoping to try and reduce that number of dropped cases as well as prosecutions. But I must also just add that it's critical to understand that some of the dependencies that arise because people are unemployed and are dependent on those who are committing domestic violence against them, this then results in most people withdrawing those cases. I think it takes us back to the many years when we used to have a battered wife syndrome or a battered child syndrome, where the battered person would continue to be dependent on the provider, even if the provider is inflicting bodily and physical and mental harm on that person, and it's something that needs to be addressed in terms of the socio-economic aspects of the country. The development of codes of conduct for the Domestic Violence Act to ensure that every role player knows what he or she has to do and how and when they need to act in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. I think we've developed that and rolling it out to ensure that people understand what their respective roles are. I have already spoken to the issue of the policy framework that we are putting in place, which we believe that once we include the prevention mechanism, it should provide very clear guidelines on who has to do what in terms of our individual roles. We are excited again about the free legal services that are provided to victims of domestic violence by the Legal Aid South Africa. Naturally, I have already alluded to some of the challenges that we are experiencing. The need for the development of the draft strategy that I've already spoken about was I think heightened by the fact that it was clear that we were not working in a coordinated basis, and that even though the legislation was in place, the legislation addressed itself to primarily three role players, which is the MPA, SAPS, and the Department of Justice, but said very little about education, very little about health, and so on and so on. So the coordination now has got to come from this strategy and as we amend the legislation. In the current environment, the intersectoral committees as well as the case flow management committees, we are seeing a lot of improvement where the judiciary is taking hold and control of the case flow management in every area, while the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is coordinating the intersectoral committee, as well as the Department of Social Development is coordinating the victim empowerment work. Members would have read by now the report that was issued by Statistics South Africa in November 2011, which was beginning to say, amongst others, and it didn't deal in too much detail with the issue of domestic violence, but it was beginning to say victims of crime are beginning to say they can feel the impact of the intersectoralness and the coordination that the JCPS cluster departments are making. And as a result, there is very positive feedback. The Statistician General did caution, however, that it may very well be that we were still reaping the benefits of the 2010 police visibility, which is why people would have felt a lot more safer in 2011 as a result of that. The need for development of norms and standards to address domestic violence in the chain from prevention to addressing the consequences of domestic violence is one of the key issues that we need to be preoccupied with in the next few months to ensure that the norms and standards are clear and are understood. It must be clear that there are MPA instructions, there are police instructions, or MPA directives and police instructions that currently exist that guide the members of the South African Police Service on how to deal with matters of domestic violence and matters of child justice and the like, as well as directives that guide the prosecutors on how to deal with these issues. And within the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, we have finalized and approved a charter and victim well, and service standards for every court on how people who come to court for whatever reason, including domestic violence, must be treated. So we've got that. But in addition, we also have a maintenance regime which comes out of the Maintenance Act, but we are trying to modernize that work to ensure that people who are victims of domestic violence can actually go through the maintenance application processes without having to interact too much with the perpetrator of domestic violence, and that their money ought to be paid through electronic transfers where they have bank accounts. We are updating the regulations on domestic violence, as well as drafting the guide for clerks of court on domestic violence. And we hope that all of this work ultimately will begin to be felt by the people on the ground. We have already indicated that the issue of statistics is a little bit of a problem for the department at this stage. And that, amongst others, is as a direct result of lack of monitoring mechanisms that have been put in place. And this is what we are now working on to ensure that the monitoring is able to pick the statistical information that is necessary and bring it for management purposes. In addition, the Victim Empowerment Program Management Forum, as well as the Gender-Based Violence Council, ought, amongst others, to assist us in ensuring that there is better monitoring and we are able to fit into these structures in terms of information for proper reporting and so that those structures are also able to give information to this house independent of us as officials of government. Continued violence and intimidation against Africans who are applying for protection orders continue, and in part it is as a result, of course, of people disregarding the terms of the Act and disregarding the law, but also it's just sheer frustration that is being experienced by the victims of domestic violence when that continues, when that continued victimization continues to happen. We are intensifying communication and awareness-raising campaigns. We have partnerships with a number of organizations, not least SAULA, which is an association of women attorneys that participate in a number of programs with the Department of Justice, and we use them in addition as a conduit to communicate and protect victims of domestic violence as well, and we believe that that partnership is a partnership that has to be nurtured as we move forward. Noting that that partnership in terms of our contractual arrangement is about to come to an end. Also, we work in, of course, various degrees with non-governmental organizations that we rely very heavily on in terms of, one, them keeping us in check and keeping us truthful to the weight of the legislation. And some of them, I'm sure they are here in this honorable house today. But we also work with communities on the ground in terms of the embezzles that we currently undergo to try and tell the members of the communities on the processes and approaches on how to approach the court and the life structure where they are instances of domestic violence. Domestic violence has severe impact on children, the elderly, as well as the mentally and physically what we are also doing is we are trying to coordinate in terms of the Children's Act, the Child Justice Act, the Older Persons Act to ensure that the harshness that is experienced by these people is cushioned in terms of these structures. I have already spoken to some of the shelters that exist and places of safety that exist in terms of that. The Victim Empowerment Management Forum as well as and Social Development are assisting with shelters and social support to victims of domestic violence, including mentally and physically disabled. Okay, I won't speak in detail to children's legislation. Safe to say it is in place, and safe to say that we are implementing the provisions of the pieces of legislation. We will be happy to take questions on these pieces of legislation. Clearly, there's a need to continue to train very extensively on each of the pieces of legislation we've spoken about, as well as on the issue of the domestic violence in terms of the protocols that people must ensure that they implement. college is a college that is owned by the Department of Justice, and its focus is training on this area, but it's also training on other work that we do in the Department of Justice. The South African Judicial Education Institute is now pretty much up and running. We've had some government problems there, but for now it's pretty much up and running. And this focus is going to be training the judiciary on issues of domestic violence and other areas of the judiciary. I had already indicated earlier that each of these pieces of legislation are very human intensive, including with the judiciary. The judiciary has to almost evolve in terms and deal with these pieces of legislation as they come in. And so the intensive training is necessary. The department is also in partnership with NPA and also implements training on the family law practice learnership, as I already indicated. The NPA also conducts multidisciplinary training through integrated domestic violence training program. The program covers all roles or stakeholders within the domestic violence sector. The staff has a dedicated training unit that deals with dedicated training programs relating to gender-based violence and domestic violence. They also train in other areas such as child justice and the like, and they are required to report to Parliament on the training that they do. One of the questions that was asked was how many people have we trained. We are giving the information there that during 2010-2011 we trained 142 domestic violence clerks, as well as from the 1st of April to 2011 to 31st January 2012, we trained 205 domestic violence clerks. Naturally, this training is not enough because you can see that we have not covered all the clerks. If you think that each court, 385 courts, need to have trained clerks, but we believe that we have to start somewhere to be able to train. There is just a small challenge as well that people are very mobile in the department, and so they move from time to time. So sometimes you train people and then they move, and then you have to train a new group of people. But we are happy as long as the people are trained wherever they are. We know that we can always pull them back from time to time if there was an agent we need for them to help us. Domestic violence, in 2009 to 10, we trained 3,181, and then in just, trained 3,181, as well as in 2010-2011, 1,983. Sexual offences, the police trained 1,379, and in 2010 they trained 1,117. And then in terms of victim empowerment, they trained 1,089, and in 2010-2011 they trained 1,018. You will see that a lot of investment is going into training, and we hope that people stay in their current position and yield the benefits of the training that has been available. Impact of alcohol abuse on domestic violence. I think there are a lot of cases, which of course are anecdotal, that indicate that there is a direct relationship, albeit anecdotal, between drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and domestic violence. The Central Drug Authority, which is CDA, has been established in terms of the Prevention of Substance Abuse Act under the auspices of the Ministry of Social Development. The CDA includes civil society experts selected via public nomination and hearings by the Portfolio Committee of Social Development and representatives from the other departments. The CDA must adopt a national drug master plan every 5 years, and I think last year there was a whole drive to finalize the last 5 years drug master plan, which was finalized last year. And each of us now has to have a mini drug master plan in terms of which we must then implement. Prevention is one of the main areas in the national drug master plan, that we as government and the JCP as cluster have to concentrate on. There was a question that was asking whether there are mechanisms in place to ensure that complaints are fed. We call the complaints in our environment as referral. The JCPS clusters have developed referral mechanisms on local, provincial, as well as national level, such as the establishment of provincial victim empowerment program for during 2011. We need to then ensure that this is working. It's in place, but we now need to ensure that it's operational and people are getting the benefits of the referral mechanism. Services for disabled victims. Sign language, I've already, I've only spoken about it today, but sign language interpreters exist in most courts and we source them from DEXA. And as we move forward, part of this is to ensure that interpreters are also trained in this specific area because domestic violence is a specialized area in Israel. Rents in court buildings are being added as funds become available. I must indicate that the issue of rents, we do get a budget from National Treasury. But if you look at the total pool of our costs, which range between 385, the magistrate's cost, but if you add the district cost and all other costs, I think you end up running very easily into infrastructure over 1,000. You can understand that we are not able to reach every cost in terms of the rent as we would wish to in good time. But naturally, we are working on that and with the program in place to ensure that our costs are disabled friendly. In 2010, one of the key programs that the, or projects that the Ministry of Police was dealing with was collecting firearms, both legal and illegal, but focusing on illegal firearms from people, and all of whom have since been destroyed. Why are we referring to this? Is that part of domestic violence is that it starts off being a clap and a kick, and ultimately escalates into serious weaponry being used against victims. And we have heard that a lot of victims die in the hands of people who are armed behind those doors. And so those programs, we believe, do assist, albeit that it's not that easy to pinpoint the impact of all of those initiatives. Socioeconomic aspects of domestic violence. We are working with other departments to address issues of socio-economic impact on domestic violence. I have already indicated, amongst others, that the initiatives that are driven by social development and the department are very useful, particularly in taking people out of poverty through social grants that have been given and extended to children. And that is very useful in terms of eliminating or reducing the dependency, particularly children who are dependent on their abuser every year. There is a social crime prevention strategy that was finalized by the cluster last year and was submitted. I won't say it was submitted to cabinet. We were working towards submitting to cabinet. My bearings are not very correct, so I don't want to be on record. On that one. But certainly it was approved by the JCPS cluster in September 2011. This strategy is very broad in its nature and it addresses every element of crime in terms of prevention, from infrastructure to drugs to people to training to employment. It's a very, it's an umbrella strategy anyway for all in government to consider and use. Victim Empowerment Management Forum renders continued support to victims of domestic violence and gender-based violence. Now, one big issue it has always been the rehabilitation of offenders. Now, in the rehabilitation process, there are two in the main key departments that are responsible for rehabilitation. One is correctional services, as well as social development. They do have programs individually, and some of those programs they run them almost concurrently. These programs include anger management, substance abuse, life skills, and the like. And we report on these programs and the performance on these programs to the JCPS cluster ministers as well as the cabinet on how we are doing in terms of the rehabilitation program. Now, there is a need naturally to deal with the improvement on service delivery, and we are continuously innovating in terms of improving our services. I've already spoken to the service delivery standard that we signed off last year, and we are appending it to every court so that people understand the types of services that we are going to be offering. I must indicate to this Honourable House, however, that for 2012 financial year, we are only going to be focusing on service delivery standards as per the charter and the standards in terms of services that are maintenance services, because we can't start every request. So we're focusing just on maintenance. But as we move forward, we are building capacity to then deliver services broadly speaking. Just in case you see the service standards and you think that we are not doing what we said we are doing, we are very clear, it's a conscious decision to start with maintenance, because we believe that with maintenance, there are so many people that we are covering that are vulnerable people, and we believe that if we start there, we are going to make the most impact, comparatively speaking. We have to continue innovating, and one of the innovations that we are using or that we are dealing with is the ICMS, which is the use of ICT between all of us. And you would have heard that there is something that we call Integrated Justice Board, and that board deals with streamlining infrastructure from police to justice to NPA to correctional services, social development, and throughout the chain as it were. And what we are doing is to try and ensure that we are able to pick up and begin to identify people that one we may call as perpetrators of domestic violence. But this IJS program and the ICMS program is not only intended for domestic violence, I must add. It's intended for anybody who goes through the criminal justice system. So it has a broader reach, but obviously there will be various chapters or modules, as we call them, which will then deal specifically with issues of domestic violence. And we believe that through that innovation, it's going to help us deal with the issue of time. Time takes from the time that the complaint is registered to the time it takes that the complaint is resolved. And one of the questions that was raised by this Honourable House was, how long does it take for a victim to start the process and to the end? And the ICMS system is going to help us answer those questions with a little bit more certainty compared to what we are doing now, where we have to gather all statistics physically and then start calculating the statistics. You would have known by now that during 2009 and 10, we conducted a survey, which is a national study, to determine the impact of policy and procedural systems that we have developed in implementing the provisions of the Domestic Violence Act. There are findings of that study that are currently working, and they include the fact that the Act, when it was promulgated, it had not been prospered. So we did not understand the impact of what was required of us as government to ensure that the Act works effectively. Similarly, and I'm digressing a bit, and I know, but similarly, the other three pieces of legislation that I've already spoken about, I think are suffering the same fate, given the fact that they are costing. We did not have adequate resources by the time we implemented the legislation. But we are committed to phasing the implementation in as and when we get fresh money. more interim protection orders were granted than confirmed, and this was one of the questions that was asked by this Honourable House as well. The final protection orders are confirmed after a period of time, and what normally happens is that the victims come and change their minds and all of that, and therefore final protection orders are not generally confirmed in the same number that they would have been applied for and granted as interim orders. Of the 150 records studies in the Northern Cape, Northwest, Eastern Cape, only 35.3% in the Northern Cape, 11% in the Northwest, and 54% in the Eastern Cape remain final. And the question is why, and we are trying to unpack that for ourselves so that we can address some of those limitations. As the initial response, the department developed the ICMS, the domestic violence, to ensure that proper reporting and tracking of cases from the entry point to the exit point, as I already indicated. So those systems, most of them are in place, and we are now rolling them out as it were. There are, however, challenges with the ICMS programs, because in some areas they work very well within the Department of Justice, but not as well in other departments because of some of the infrastructure challenges and the ICT challenges in other departments. But we are now working together as a subset of the infrastructure to ensure that we understand where the limitations are in terms of service delivery across the region. There was a key question that was asking who serves protection orders. In terms of the Act, naturally, the Act talks about the police and the sheriff, but the protection orders are also served by clerks of court, and you probably, as members of this Honourable House, know that there are areas, the sheriff's business is very big, but it's concentrated where there's a lot of money. So in rural areas where there's not enough money, sheriffs don't make, their business model does not work. And so under such circumstances, officials who are clerks of court do also set processes, and it's provided for in the legislation. And we think that we should keep that, because it then means that if our business is to be served only by staff and by sheriff, then we won't reach those people in terms of serving people. Drawing to conclusions, I have recorded some of the challenges, not all, but some of the challenges that we are experiencing in terms of implementing. But I've also recorded that we are working on the amendments to try and enhance some of those areas that we see as a challenge in terms of the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. I have also indicated that we are working a lot more better as a cluster at national level. We need to just ensure that the cluster and the intersectoral approach moves downstream, so that every South African and every person in the entire South African community can know that, because this is not only limited to South Africa. The recent victim of crime survey that I've already alluded to very briefly, that was published in November 2011, indicates that victims of crime are beginning to see some results in the fight against crime and improvement. And these victims would naturally include victims of domestic violence. I mustn't just do a sweeping statement on the positives that comes out of the victim of crime survey that Statistics South Africa is doing. I must also indicate that one of the deep concerning factors that came out of the survey was the fact that the people who are victims of either sexual offenses or domestic violence are very reluctant to disclose or talk to people who come and interview them, are very reluctant. And it's a serious challenge for us, because unless you know, we are not able to address that issue. So even the survey did indicate that there is that limitation, but of course they didn't have enough information to make a strong statement to that effect. We are hoping, and we've indicated to the Statistician General, that it would assist us very much as a cluster that we understand why are people reluctant to speak to issues of domestic violence, so that we are able to address some of those issues. Some of them we know anecdotally, but we need a scientific and an empirical data to tell us in a conclusive manner. When it comes to sexual offences, 38.4% of victims were victimized by known community members in the areas of their own residence. In 2010, most incidents of assault, 35.7% of them occurred at home, while 18.6% occurred in the street, outside of office shops and the like. More than 90% of the perpetrators of sexual offences used physical force, followed by using a gun as well as a knife. And I already touched very briefly on the project that the police did 2 years ago, which was just taking those guns away from the hands of the people who held them. And I think those projects must be considered to continue so that we ensure that we limit fatal incidences within the environment of domestic violence. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I know that I've not answered all the questions. We had provided specifically written answers to the questions that were asked by this Honourable House, and we are happy to elaborate on those questions if the Chair would allow us. Thank you. If the Chair would allow us. There are some limitations, and the limitations include that domestic violence takes place in homes, and I think the police in their report in the crime statistics do raise this issue very sharply, that it's near impossible to have police everywhere in family homes, and therefore every one of us must play that role and raise a flag if there are issues of domestic violence. And members would know that we used to have a police community forum, yes. We used to have that, and there is now the Department of Police, the Secretariat for Police, is driving a project where we reintroduce community safety forums and community so that they exist everywhere, so that we rely more on these institutions in terms of helping us fight the scourge of domestic violence in our country. The final emphasis is the issue of resources. The following slides, Chair, which have been circulated, deal with some of the numbers in terms of statistics, which I'm not going to go through unless honourable members need us to. But I think I'm happy to close the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope for your presentation, which actually covers some of the questions, but I do hope that we have noted down from the presentation that was given to us some of the issues that we would like to raise, and also those issues that are also, you know, the ones that were sent to the justice with responses. I know that most of them you would like to engage on. So without wasting any time, I will afford you the opportunity to then interact with both the presentation and the questions. I will note hands. I will start with you, Honorable. Number one, number two, number three, in that order. Number four, and then Danny, you are number five in that order.
Thank you, Chair. I think we must all feel sympathy for the DG in the last few tired for giving such a long, comprehensive report. I feel sympathy for you, Gigi. Chair, my question is going to be one, and that is, what is the department thinking for the future? From the report, quite a great effort has been made by the department. Clusters have been formed. Institutions have been established. Parliament has passed legislation. And many other efforts that have been made. I would like to know, and honestly so, and with sympathy as well, because I could see, although the statistics show some minimal decline of occurrences of these things, but it is still at an alarming point. And not only the occurrence, but even the brutality that is meted out. What is the department thinking as a plan in the future to implement, and more so, I would like that plan should also be jointly thought by Parliament. Because to me, this is a societal problem. We have seen this, you know, increasing, especially after democracy. I must say, this is my impression. And what is the cause of this occurrences? We must start to think in dealing with the cause rather than the symptom. Chair, that is my question, and as I have indicated earlier, I'm not going to sit and wait for the answer. I will follow the answer in the recorded reply. I have, as I said earlier, got a serious appointment outside Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to greet our honorable members and everybody and say hi to everybody after a long absence. It's nice to be back. Maybe my questions will be a little bit vague because I've not been in the committee for some time. But there are some concerns that I would like. First of all, let me just congratulate the DG for this lovely presentation. But when it comes to domestic violence, you know, it touches each and everybody's heart. I would like to ask the first question in page 7, where the 385 magistrate courts. I would like to know, where are they situated, these courts? When they were being fetched, the 385 courts, did you think of the distance of our rural people to go there? Because most of the violence occur at night, and I would like to know, where are these courts situated to accommodate our rural people? And the 60 shelters countrywide, what causes the delay? I think we in South Africa have a lot of money. We have money to build more shelters, and violence it deteriorates the future of our youth and we mothers and grandmothers. why only 60? Can't we try and have more of this? And there's another question is, you'll excuse me, Chair, I'll just speak but once. There's a lot of training. It's very good to train. But I would like to know, when this training happens, do we have a track back or is it just once off? And is there any refresher courses done? Or we just continue training and training and training? The domestic violence is rife all over. And here, the page nine, it's 20,495,496. Does this include all the provinces, or is it only the reported violences that we know? The other question is the Braille booklet. You count it as development, the successes. Are we really successful in this? Which areas are we successful in? Can we know, just be specific and say, the Braille booklet in domestic violence in this province, we are successful because A, B, C, D. The other question that I'm having, sorry, Chairperson, is that the criminal prosecution 2009 and 2011. Maybe it's because of my age, I don't know. There's more new matters reported here. It's not numbered. The 2009, 2010, 2011. The withdrawn cases, the finalized cases. That page is not numbered, but I think it's number 27, if I'm not wrong, or 20, it's in the 20s, because the next one also hasn't got a number. The finalized numbers, 8,958, for me it's far less than the ones that are reported, the 32,464. I agree that the withdrawal is because of unemployment, people relying on the abusers or whatever. But the percentage for me, the 27.6, don't we think it's very low? I would like to come to an end with this one, Madam Chair. I attend one of the committees. And they are very, very sensitive about their chronic names. I would like that, can't we just first say what you say? If it's ICMS, we mention so that we can know JHBTR, what does that mean? Because their chronic names sometimes, you know, they... Thank you, Chairperson.
My turn. Thank you. I'll also just ask all my questions. Thank you, Chair. Sorry that I was late this morning, but it was of incorrect information that was given to me. And I'm sorry that my cell phone went off. I didn't switch it off because I was really very busy when I came over here. Just on the question that my colleague has now asked on the withdrawal of cases, 8958 were only processed, and 32,464 cases were reported. What was the main reason for this? What was the main reason for all these cases being withdrawn? Has this anything to do with the empowerment of our women? Because mostly it's women that report and that has these cases put up in court. So what was the main reason? My first question is on the department has reported that it has translated the application forms for a protection form into all 11 languages. Are there any of these copies? If I go to my local court tomorrow, will I find any of these copies in my local municipality where I am, which is my constituency in Witzenberg? Will I find any of these copies? Can you give me the assurance that I'll find any of these copies in the local office there in all languages that my people can be serviced in? Number two is the after-hours services. And here I also speak for the rural areas. Do we have any after-hours services in the rural areas? And is there any roster set up at the police stations? Will I be able to find that roster? Is it put up? Number three, what percentage of your budget goes to admin costs? What percentage of the department's budget goes to admin costs? And what portion of your budget goes to DBA? What portion of your budget? My next question, did this department ever consider working on a compensation for victims of violence and abuse? That ever considered? And I'm asking this because of victims having more privileges than, perpetrators having more privileges than victims. On resources and this budget, I cannot even understand why this department has a budget like this. Am I correct if I say 117 million? Is that the budget that we have for this year? Can somebody help me there? What is our budget for this our portfolio for this year? Okay. In any case, seeing that we are battling with resources, did we ever explore going to local municipalities? Only on a very common thing like ramps being put to our disabled or our blind people that they can fund from their budget, from their local budget. Did we ever consider doing that? And then, on page 4 of your presentation, the DG said that shortly the department will report to UN on human rights and the status of human rights in South Africa. Is it possible that this committee can have a copy of your report to them? On page 6 of the legislative provisions to implement rights, surely you do have challenges. What is the situation with challenges such as social workers to implement, police officers, magistrates courts, health departments being absent? What is the challenge out there? Okay. And then I think the previous speaker spoke on breakdowns of magistrate courts. I would like to have a breakdown on the management of domestic violence cases at courts and municipality level. All those stats that you gave us does not refer to areas or to provinces. Is it possible, because I'd like to do oversight, seeing that our committee is a monitoring committee, just to do oversight to see if these things are being implemented. And then on page 8, DOJCD initiatives, are there any time frames set to complete the strategy? The prevention, development of prevention strategy. Is there a time frame set to complete the strategy on this? Or when will it be completed? And what is the last? There's a last one, Chair. I won't keep everything. Yeah. Areas which we are entirely in the domain of the JPCS cluster. I was thinking that if they need to be, if all these entities, unemployment relates to labor, education, social development, transport, and health, if they are to be part of the solution, why can we not have a combined meeting on this? And I think I must ask the chair on that one. Updating the regulations, is time frames is a helpful tool to get to your goal? Is there any time frame set? And then I'm shocked to see that the costing was never done, because the costing would have definitely led you to all your challenges. Why was the costing never done? Thank you. I'll stop there for a while. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Did you thank you for the presentation. On page, the slides are not numbered. Okay, but on a page where you talk about the development of the integrated case management system that the department has developed, when was this developed, and has any analysis been done to check if it's really, really effective and impacts on the whole system? Related to that is also the question of the withdrawal of cases by other clients. You mentioned that it might be due to the battered women syndrome or child, you know, syndrome, but have you ever done any analysis or, you know, a micro-research as well to say why actually, to get the real reason? Because we also learn about secondary victimization, where the very clients are ill-treated by the very officials. And maybe going to that is to say, how do you instill discipline in the department? I mean, do you have disciplinary procedures? And who monitors? How do you evaluate that things are happening in that department? And then maybe going to that as well, do you have what we call client complaints management system of some sort? And do you have people who maybe sit in that committee and analyze the complaints of the clients so that you're able to deal with the problem? Like you said previously, that if you don't know, how do you, you know, heal or help? And then in terms of training, I mean, once of training honestly doesn't work, you know, especially if there's no monitoring evaluation to say, are people implementing and adhering what they've gained during the courses? So I want to know if you've got something that is called, we used to call it professional continuous development, you know, programs to say, how do we further enhance and advance the knowledge of the people, and also ensure that they adhere, you know, to that, because we cannot be giving education to people. They just fill their CVs for further employment opportunities, but never implemented in the department, because we need to see impact. And then I think the other question is on the very act itself, the Domestic Violence Act. I'm actually shocked that it is an act of 1998, but to date, 14 years later, it's still not costed. And basically, it won't take us anywhere if you don't know the costing of this. And I'm worried about your micro-study findings, because for me, they are not so, how do you put it, solid. You know, they're not reliable, because the act was not costed. You get what I mean? So you cannot even put it as a benchmark study or something you can, in future when you do a study, compare it with. I know you use your policies, you use your procedures and systems, but numbers are very important as well. And connected to this, I think when I looked at there's one of the questions about the finance, where you've got so much little money in terms of this act and all that. I think it's because it was never costed. So, I mean, even Treasury won't take as serious when it comes to that, when you ask for money, but you never costed to say, this is what I'm going to do for it. So I just want to know what's going to happen. I'm happy because you said probably you're going to cost it, and then, I mean, are you going to come now with a valid, solid benchmark, you know, sort of a research that will actually be the basis? Because this one, honestly speaking, for me, it hasn't even begun to talk, you know, to say these are the issues, this is how you can go and address them. Because probably, maybe you're even short of staff, you don't even know, because you didn't cost. Like you said, you need many, many, many people. This is type of a hands-on, you know, groundwork type of act that needs a lot of people, like you said, and intersectoral communication and working together. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, my name, as you know, is Danny Kikana. I was actually interested to hear other people's names. You said they should announce, but I see you forgot to remind them. Chair, my question is on the very beginning part of this presentation, where the DG was saying, she listed actually Declaration Act from United Nations on Women Domestic Violence. I see there was lack of disability there. Just reminder that we are also interested to know if the Disability Act or declaration that is also part of that list. The second point, so you know when you listen to this lengthy presentation and very good and comprehensive presentation, the ultimate feeling is that, God, where are we going when there's so much violence and bad things happening right at the basic unit of a society called family? Because once that is the case, where are we heading to as a society? Now, declarations are there at United Nations. My question is, just somebody spoke about cause and effect. We're treating kind of the symptom, the end of the stick. If we go to the root cause, which is poverty, as the analysis says, are we able at United Nations to say, especially to those countries that are controlling 80% of the economies of the world, you know, we in the third world, when the first world collapses, the economy collapses, you are also affected, our economies go down. Now, are we also able to mobilize them and say, guys, just look at the effect of all this investment that you do and leave us unemployed, what the side effects are? I'm saying this because the people of environment are doing climate change. There's a big organization all over the world that tell miners, if you open up a mine, you must rehabilitate the soil after. Don't leave it with mine dams and all the bad things. In your budget, build up rehabilitation of all those mine dams. Are we also able not just to do declarations, to say right at the root of all the people that are causing unemployment, that investment is not just about making money, it is about people, that human intensive thing that you spoke about. It is about people, make sure people are employed so that you can have stable society. Are that really not taking up this fight where we should, right at the core where we should take it? That is why it is a matter of the police, you know, we're dealing with the symptom rather than the cause. So I just want to hear the response about what are we doing right there at United Nations. Are we going to economic development part of United Nations and raising this thing?
Thank you, Honourable Members. Before you respond, can I just also come up with some few questions here and concerns? The one concern is about your slide on child witness testifying rules. I don't know how real that is, because you know it's good to have that on paper. But in one court where one witnessed something, this is not really, I don't know whether is it because it's not being monitored and hence boiling, you know, back to what members are saying, to say, you know, when you don't have time frame, when you don't have deadlines, you will never know what the results are like. And then one of the witnesses also in the slides is that, the location of all these, mentioning of, for instance, you know, where you have numbers of shelters and also the courts that the members are saying. I think it's quite useful when you say we have got so many, you know, shelters, and then you specify as to where they are located. And then there is little, very little mentioned, although it has already been said, about, you know, mentioning of persons with disability. Very little mentioned about them. And also the rural areas. I heard you in your presentation saying that, you know, it was going to be quite costly for the sheriffs to go to rural areas. Don't you think that we are really, not taking, you know, people in the rural areas seriously?
we can't really say that, and I won't go to other areas that have been, you know, mentioned by members when it comes to costing, because since we had this implementation of the GVA, we have never seen, you know, any effective, you know, let me say, maybe costing like they mentioned, you know, to say, is it because, you know, this sector is not taken seriously? That is why we never see it, even in the budget. You can never come across it being budgeted for. Is it impossible to do that? Really? It's too long that we have been waiting for us to see it being costed out, but we don't see it, even in the budget. Those are some of the few that I wanted to say.
Ultimately, it is not just the Department of Justice or the police
or social development that is going to bring a solution to the department, but to the table, but it is the collective thought and brains of all of us, including, of course, the members of this Honorable House, that is going to help us to come up with a comprehensive plan that will address the issues at hand. One of the documents I spoke to, which I said I couldn't recall at the top of my head, and as a cluster chair I should have, is the integrated social crime prevention strategy. And I said that document is very all-inclusive and all-encompassing in terms of dealing with issues of crime. And in doing that, this document was done to look at a whole range of things which we believe should affect us. And so when we are talking to the plan, the honorable member that has just left, when we're talking about the plan, we believe very strongly that the integrated social crime prevention strategy would be one of those elements that will give us a window to trying to resolve or resolving the problem at hand. Because what this integrated social crime prevention strategy does is that it addresses the causes, which will be issues of education, issues of infrastructure, issues of employment, issues of and the like. It addresses those issues, but it also it begins to bring forward some of the mitigation strategies that must be brought on each level of the integrated crime prevention strategy. So we do believe that strategy is going to be a broad solution, and we are quite happy that as soon as the document has been considered by Cabinet, we are able to share with this Honorable House, of course, at the time appropriate or suitable to the committee. The question around courts, there was a question, how many courts are there, where are they, and do they exist everywhere? We come from the dispensation where courts were built predominantly in inner cities and predominantly to a certain extent in townships. And therefore there were very few courts that existed in rural areas and the like. Pardon me, Chair, I just want to pick up because I do have this information on my cell. So when I was saying that there are 385 magistrate courts, that is correct information. But in terms of the old dispensation, which we haven't migrated too much away from, is that there are magisterial districts throughout the country. So we are sitting in magisterial districts as we sit here, and so on and so on. So unfortunately, in rural areas, and I come from one, so I know that in rural areas, very few rural areas would have a court. And if they do have a court, it's actually very far. And what we are doing is that they are we have what we call magisterial courts, which are magistrate courts. We have district courts. We have, and these are all courts that we try and bring them closer and closer to the people. Ultimately, the ideal, not today, not in the next 10 years maybe, the ideal is to have a court within a vicinity of the community, but is it going to happen in the next 10 years or 20 years? I'm not sure. But that's where we are. So some of the services that we then bring, some of the services that we bring are trying to compensate for that. But also we are building courts. I must say this. We are building courts in rural areas. We are building courts in townships. I think we're just finishing a court now in Duzuma. You will know that in Duzuma has never had a court, and Duzuma is such a huge community which caters for some of the Wamash population, the Nanda population, Matendini population, and all of that population. It never had a court. It was using a school, I think 3-4 classes in a school as a court for a very long time. So those are some of the things. That court is going to be finished. I think it's coming on stream somewhere in April 2012 or thereabouts. I'm not very sure of the exact date. But it's not the only court that is currently under construction. But we are very thin on the courts, and I must indicate they're extremely thin on resources, and therefore we plan courts and we build them, and then we have to plan for a long time and then build a court. And so that's the reality. That is why we then have these other interventions that we do. It doesn't answer the question, though, whether if someone was experiencing domestic violence at night, which was a question that was raised later in the stream of questions, whether that person will have access to a periodic court, because as through its name, a periodic court will happen, will sit at a particular period. So if you're experiencing domestic violence at night, you're not going to have access to that. We acknowledge that. And we are all trying to find a solution to some of those challenges. So therefore, what we can do and we will do when we leave this room is we will prepare a table which will show each court and where it is in the provincial regional area. Just as we don't have provinces, we have regions in the regional area. So we will show that, and we will make that information available to the secretariat of this honorable house or houses, so that information can then be distributed. The issue, and I must apologize, this is not just a complaint that has come from this honorable house. It's just a complaint that sometimes we remember, sometimes we forget of using acronyms, and I apologize for you having used the ICMS and the IJS for the Integrated Justice Board. They become so much part of our lives. I apologize profusely for that. But the point, though, was, do we track the training that we give to people? And in tracking the training, do we see whether the training makes sense and whether people who are trained are benefiting, but more specifically, whether people who are supposed to see the difference, who are the victims, are actually seeing the difference? Let me answer the question in this way. In our last expo, which was on Monday this week, we have expos every other Monday, this issue came up, and we said Justice College must start now. We haven't been doing that. Justice College must start assessing people before they go to training, because that's another issue. We assume that we all go to training and we'll come out better. So people, we must develop a standard that assesses people before they go to training and people after they come back from training, but also train through and also track through their managers whether they are seeing the difference. But ultimately, it is through services surveys that we can only tell whether people are getting better or not. So the long and the short answer to that question is that we haven't been doing formal assessments. I think the only closest to an assessment that we would come to, and depending on the relationship of the manager and the supervisee, would be through a performance agreement, which does not give you a fair reflection of whether the person is operating better than they were before. So it's a huge area. My colleague will compliment. She will also speak to the issue of rage. But and the honourable member who has just left asked whether in fact we do think broadly on issues of disability, and I think that question also came towards the end of the question. We do think about disability, and we do take disability very seriously and make it very central to our planning. I'll come back to the issue of budgets, the questions of budgets that were raised earlier. So part of our plan, if you look at REMP is precisely to look at augmenting infrastructure where it exists. Remember that the cost, all 385 of them, if you talk about lower cost, they were built many years ago. And so the costs that are currently being built are coming up with their own rent. But costs that were built a long time ago, we then have to go and augment there. If that the ramp money, for instance, last year we had 80 million in ramp money. And we finished it, and 80 million can't go far. But we appreciate that from time to time when we get it from Treasury, because then that ramp money helps us in fixing some of the infrastructure, but not all of the infrastructure. So you won't see, as you go to your constituencies, courts that have REMP, all of them, or are disability-friendly, all of them. But you will go to courts that you will find that
they are now disability friendly. Maybe not through the whole range of disabilities, but some disabilities, they would be disability friendly. If this was an ideal world, we would do all of that. But we, for instance, just to give you a sense of budget, as I said last year, I think, and I'm recalling now from memory, we had 80 million. I think this year we have about, give or take, 120 million or so of money that we will work towards dealing with issues of infrastructure in broad terms, but specifically dealing with rent. We do get allocated money for capital works, which is separate from rent. But the capital works are for building new infrastructure altogether. And even that money is not adequate, and the question was whether there are costs in rural areas. That is why we will build a court here, and then it will take us another 3 years before we build another court, because we have to spread our resources quite significantly. Our total budget last year was in the range of 10.5 billion, including the transfers that go to Legal Aid South Africa and so on and so on. Ultimately, I think we get left with about 4.2 billion or so, and this is the 2010 numbers, 2011 numbers. I may not recall them appropriately. But what that does is that it gives us, as the Department of Justice, the whole of us, and the question was on administration budget, the whole of us must then share in give or take plus minus 5 billion rent, at most, and look at core functions, look at administrative functions, and look at infrastructure, look at security, look at hardware and software and the like. And I can give you a sense, more or less, of what each of those areas cost us, security being the biggest slice of the budget that we spend, ICT infrastructure being the second biggest infrastructure, as well as, of course, capital works and the like. So it is very clear to us how money is allocated, and we do centralize the allocation of budget so that we see whether people are getting sufficient resources to do what they have to do. Now, the biggest chunk of our budget is the Department of Justice, and I'm not speaking numbers, forgive me for that, goes to court services. From court services deals with actual physical costs, the infrastructure and the like, but they also deal with issues of vulnerable groups. Now, vulnerable groups under the leadership of Advocate Kambula then get an allocation of money that they must deal with. And under vulnerable groups, just for this committee's broad understanding, is that you have sexual offences, you have children, you have elderly persons, you have child justice, you have LGBTI who are the lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and intersex. You have maintenance, you have restorative justice, and then domestic violence. And all of this sits under vulnerable groups. And so we do broad splits, but we don't do line splits. Line splits happen at the line function level. But we are satisfied with the limited resources that we have at our disposal. We are able to allocate resources to vulnerable groups accordingly. Satisfied within context, Honourable Member, not that we are happy, but we are satisfied within the budget that we have. Translations, whether all the translations you will find if you were to go to a court tomorrow or after this meeting, I do not want to say yes, absolutely, but you will find some translations. What we try and do, and it's not always the case that you will find 11 languages in every court, we try and say the dominant languages in that environment at least will be translated. Let me use an example. In KZN, as an example, I'm not biased towards KZN, but in KZN as an example, you will find that you will generally have Zulu translation of all things, and then in Gauteng you'll have Pedi translations and so on and so on. So we try and provide in that way. It doesn't mean that we don't want to provide in broad sense all the time, but resources are such that translations are very costly. But we try and ensure that where there are no translations, we provide other means of ensuring that those people do get access. Rosters of police, my colleagues from SAP, but rosters from police, I do understand that police do have some rosters. Are they working functionally all the time? I will not be able to answer that question specifically, but it's a question that we appeal to the Honorable Chair that we answer in writing, and we will convey that question to police. Are there adequate social workers, police, health workers, and the like? The simple answer is that we will never have a situation where we have adequate social workers, police, class of court, and the like. We won't. But what we will do is that from time to time, as and when our resources grow, we will make available those resources. When we were costing the Child Justice Act, the biggest delaying factor of finalizing that legislation and getting it, the frantic work that we were doing just before the 1st of April 2010, was trying to reach agreement between the number of probation officers that social development must have in place from time to time, given the fact that they are also operating a budget and they can't just take all their budgets and put it in one basket. So it's those contestations in the needs of the budget that we must always deal with and ensure that when we are asking for resources, we are cognizant that we need probation officers, we need interpreters, we need all of these other things, and each one of them must exist for a justice system to operate. So the answer is no, we don't have adequate. We are unlikely to ever have adequate, but we are likely to operate and try and maximize what we have so that we operate optimally. Once of training, it is absolutely true that some elements of training are once off, but there is ongoing training and there is ongoing development as well in specific areas. Once of training generally happens when it's the start of the implementation of legislation. So if you're talking about Children's Act, Domestic Violence Act, Sexual Offences Act, at the beginning you will have one big once of training so that everybody knows what they have to do. Then as a line, they then train on an ongoing basis. Now, there is formal training and informal training, on-the-job training. It's the on-the-job training that we try and focus a lot more on, because these are people who must do. Also, we are cognizant that we can't be taking people always away from work. If I give you a practical example, we have how many?
We have about 1,300.
Yeah, we have a big number of magistrates. And we meet with them during training. I mean, 2 weeks ago, they were training on designing templates for the utilization of preliminary inquiries in terms of the Child Justice Act. Now, if you take 40 magistrates at any given point in time and you put them in class for the full day, it means 40 people are out of work there. And it means cases are not moving. And those are but some of the things that we need to be cognizant of as we train. So there are practicalities on the ground, there are realities on the ground, but there is goodwill both from the judiciary side, and we've had tremendous support from the judiciary in the implementation of Domestic Violence Act as well as the other pieces of legislation. And we are not happy, but we are content with where we are. We hope that we can do better from time to time. Sheriff, I really have to talk, Chair, as my last contribution to the issue of sheriffs. Sheriffs are regulated by the Sheriff's Act. Sheriffs, our role as the Department of Justice, sheriffs have always been supporting the court, very integral to the running of the court, but are not owned by the Department of Justice. And therefore, that is why in certain areas we will make different interventions
to ensure that we augment the space where sheriffs don't exist. It's not that, in fact, we said, the minister and myself and my colleagues who are responsible for the sheriffs, we sat with the sheriffs board, we sat with the sheriffs in the amendment of the regulation, in the promulgation, in the finalization of the regulation, as well as the amendment of legislation, as well as the appointment of sheriffs, as well as the appointment of boards. We sat with them and we said, it is absolutely imperative that you, or important that you go and you service rural communities as well. There is no pleading that has not been done. So we are pleading with them, we are engaging, they are partners, key partners, and we'll continue to do that. They're not saying no, they don't want to do that. It's just that you have to find a sheriff who will sit there and serve one process or two processes or three processes that don't pay. And then you understand that they just pack and literally go. So we have to find a different model as government of saying how do we augment. We do have officials that we think can do the job. And in fact, just as a slight digression, Chair, but just to illustrate the point, in serving international maintenance processes that, let's say, it arose in Zimbabwe or Zambia or Mozambique, we serve them through officials in the Department of International Relations, well, in the Unit International Relations in Department of Justice. They are not served by sheriffs. So that system does work. You just have to know where it works better, and you have to refine it. And our biggest work right now going forward is to ensure that we refine the system so that the sheriff system works well, the police system works well, where we are providing the service by our own people, that system too works well and has proper oversight. Because in the sheriff's environment, the real reason why it works is that it has a proper oversight through the sheriff's board. And in our environment, because we are a department, it lies there. And what we want to do is contain it and know that it has proper oversight and we can get proper reports from that. And Chair, that's what I wanted to just clarify. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Madam Chair, thank you, DG, and thank you, Madam Chair. What I will be is just to complement what the DJ has just already said, but first in connection with the assessment. It's Advocate Kambola. As DJ has already introduced, I'm heading the unit and the promotion of the rights of vulnerable groups within the department. Thank you. So one of the issues that I would like just to put an addition to what DJ has already said is on training. There is the learnership that the department led in its development working with SACVITA and the NPA. So it is a learnership, it's a family law practice learnership, and it's got a number of unit standards for maintenance, for divorce, and also for domestic violence, all issues that are related to family law. But then with domestic violence, and probably let me just say that as a learnership, it's got three assessment methods. The first, it is the baseline assessment, which is done before the learners go to go for the contact learning. The contact learning is that learning process that takes you from your workplace to one central place where you're going to be studying. So it's got the baseline, and the baseline assessment is meant to just to check as to are we getting the right people to our classes, and what level of understanding, of knowledge first that they have, and also of understanding, because there's a difference between knowledge and understanding. And then the second assessment that it provides is called the formative assessment. The formative assessment is done during the contact learning, where it is done in form of exercises and where they are taken through some kind of testing. Assessment, we are calling them, in terms of SAQA now, we're not calling them examinations. They are called assessments. So it's some kind of a testing. What are they going on with the learning process during the contact learning? And then we have the summative assessment, which is done at the end of the of the learning process. The summative assessment is what was previously called examination. So they go through that, and then it is a process, therefore, that is also it has to go through the assessors, where they are checked whether they did so well, and then it goes through moderation, and then after that they get their certificates. But it is a process that ensures that we have quality skills, and we also have developed a level of knowledge that is assessed in terms of the assessment criteria that are set by SAQA. The next thing that I would like to respond to, which did you say that I must, it is the Braille domestic violence. I think as a department we are quite excited. I'm not saying that it's not something that we should have done, we should have done long time ago. But then we do admit that the persons with disability have been neglected for quite a long time. But now as a department we are quite excited that there is something that we are doing for the blind. And what we did at the beginning of the previous financial year, we're still in this financial year, but let me say the beginning of last year, what we did was to look into the study report that was relating to numbers, quantifying persons with disabilities. So we learned that the blind are the most in the country. They are the ones that are having the highest number. So the reason for that is because we are initiating this process. So we were like, let's start with where the majority people are. So then we started this project of developing the Braille for domestic violence, and we did not develop it alone. We wrote in the NGOs that are leading in this, in issues dealing with persons with disabilities. So the project, the development process is finished as we speak right now, but it is a matter now of printing that domestic violence booklet, and then we develop it. We have already worked with, looked into the issues of how are we going to be now implementing this, and where our areas are going to be, and the plan in the implementation of this project. But then it is quite exciting that there is something that we do have. So in terms of whether it does work right now, we cannot say that because it still has to be printed, but definitely we will have a plan of reaching out to the blind and ensuring that it is a project that works for them. The printing, the implementation definitely is going to be in the next financial year, because the printing is committed for this financial year. So definitely by March it will be done.
Are you aware of the? Are there any Braille printers that you have contacted already? Any problems?
The process is done at national level, so there is the documentation as to ensure that this is done and all that it has already been done. But then the service providers definitely are going to be. At national, I'm looking at the project manager and advocating Mali over there. But then it is at a stage where the content, that translation and all that has been done. But now when I say printing, I mean concretizing that information. And so, yes, but then it is a process that is going to be done at a national level, and then we will distribute it to the region.
The only reason why I'm asking this is that I'm not aware of many Braille printers. They are really very, very few in our country. And that is the reason why I'm asking, is there any printer that was allocated to do the printing of Braille?
Sure.
Can I chip in as far as braiding is concerned? I'm happy about the explanation, but I'm not comfortable that we are still going to process it in the next financial year. Is it necessary for you to list it as successful, you know, the notable successes? Are we successful before we haven't even started it as yet? And on the other one that the DG, I'm happy about the explanation, Chair, and I'm satisfied. But I'm not happy about the comment that yes, the interpretation, something like we did something in an area in KwaZulu-Natal, in a rural area, in the court. Was it something like Intukuzo or something? Intozuma. And then I was quite happy when you said that. But the last wedding made me very uncomfortable. That we did that in Kwantozuma, but we should bear in mind that it's costly, it's expensive to do that. I quite agree. But when you are, let's say for instance, you're talking to the community who are also desperate in getting that, it means to them they were not considered. I want you to be in my area, you know, when you tell them that I've done this in the province, but you should know that it's expensive. It means that you should forget about it. So, Chair, it is expensive, I do understand. But when you tell people that it's expensive, I quite agree. But it means that the other provinces should forget about it. Nothing is cheap. Nothing is cheap. We are dead right. But if you can just or say something different and say, well, other provinces we are getting to. That's my point.
I think, DG, what actually concerns members is because rural areas is one of the government priorities. Now, when we come back and say it's expensive, I think I really understand what you mean.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I note that, and it's not meant to come out the way it has come out. So maybe let me apologize for that. The point, though, and incidentally, we are not only building courts in I was just using Google as an example. In fact, we are in construction of the High Court in Limpopo right now. We are clearing sites. We haven't started construction in Mpumalanga, the High Court, because there are no High Courts in the school. Regions, and they are using Pretoria, both of them, and so to ease the traffic to Pretoria, but to bring justice closer to the people who are living in Mpumalanga and Limpopo respectively. We are building in Lutville, somewhere here in Lutville, and so there are many costs. All I was saying, I was using an example in terms of phasing and planning. And I was also using it in the context of bringing in immediate intervention so that whilst we are waiting, because we have to wait for the cost to be built, for money to be allocated to us, that was the context. So the expense was within that context. And just to give you a sense, to build a court, a reasonably sized court, wouldn't cost you anything less than $500,000. It's a lot of money. So that's the context of the expense. Therefore, you have to plan and you have to do everything else. But I recognize the point, and I do, and I take it with the spirit it is given, that we are not making people in rural areas wait. In fact, there are a number of rural areas that the minister has visited as part of his meetings, where people have said, we need a court here, not there, because yes, we can go there, but we don't always have transport money and all of those things, and we want courts to be closer to us. Part of our priorities as the Department of Justice and our reason for existence is bringing justice to everyone in South Africa, not just people in towns and all of that. And Uzuma was just one of those examples where I know a court is coming up on stream very, very shortly. And also, incidentally, Uzuma does not address fully the ruralness, because Uzuma is in the what you call peri urban kind of area, but it services quite a vast population. So it was within that context, and I understand, and in future I will devote a court to provision. Thank you. Chair, on the issue of Braille, I fully accept the observation that is made by members, but let me explain why we think the thing is a big success for us, and maybe it's beating our own little drum, hoping that people will hear it. Braille is still very difficult. I think the honourable member was beginning to say that there are even the printers are far and few between in the country, and that's the level of excitement. We are saying, in spite of all of that, we work with DESTA to ensure that we do the work. So that's what we are saying. We are also saying, even broadly in government, not so long ago I saw a business card of one departmental official with Braille. Oh yes, it is your department. Okay, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But the point of the matter is that when you see that it's so heartening that there are people who are already there, so we said we're not going to be left behind. We want to get our work done in that context. So that's the level of excitement. And so when we say it's a success, it's because it's almost seeing this thing in incubation and knowing that it's just about to happen. And just to clear the issue of timeline, year end, financial year, we are still in 2011 financial year. So in this budget for this financial year, it's already appropriated for that purpose. So we will go to print, and then in the new financial year, if we're printing, we will be printing additional material, because naturally we won't be able to print every material for every body within all regions in the country. So it is within that context, that's the excitement. We didn't mean to mislead you, and we apologize if we did, but it passes our own excitement rather than everybody else.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I think you assisted me. That was one of my points I wanted to raise. But let me introduce myself. I'm Honorable Dingeni. The name is Connie. Chairperson, mine, I've got one point. Mine is around the issue of illegal aid, South Africa. I want to know that are our communities aware of these free services of illegal aid? And how many cases does illegal aid deal with annually or monthly? Secondly, the issue of the 324 CCTVs, are these TVs monitored? You know the reason why I'm a bit worried. I see a lot of wrongdoing happening in courts and in some areas. I'm not quite sure if these CCTVs are monitored. Same applies to the 449 one-way mirror fitted in courtrooms. I just want to know that. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just one person or input with regard to declining of cases, or with, and then we said we picked out withdrawal. So I want to ask the department, are you aware that the police at the police stations, when a person comes, they normally sometimes they have a wrong classification of the incident, where you find that instead of domestic violence they write common assault, and I think this is really contributing a lot to the decline of cases. Something has got to be done, because we'll actually find that these police are being trained, but now when it comes to classification, they do their own thing, and this is very, very important for us as far as the statistics go, to know whether this case is escalating or not.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Muntu Nomalo. Mine is a very short question, because most of the members have already asked the questions. Sometimes when we meet with the Department of Police, if you ask questions about the cases, they always say, we are arresting this culprit, but the Department of Justice, they give them bail. You know, there's any working relationship between the police and the Department of Justice? Because really, if you are talking about the domestic violence, this person is arrested today, the next day he's out. You go to police station, they say it's not us, it's the Department of Justice. And please, DG, if you can just make sure that when you send us a state where the courts are, please make sure that you send us even the name, the what the shelters, where we can find the shelters, because sometimes we are working on the ground. You find this woman, really, she stays there because she don't know where she can go. And if you don't even know where is the shelter, that you can say, go to police station, they'll give you okay, here's the shelter. If they don't refer you to the shelter, you can just go straight to the shelter. If you can have that information, we can be very happy, even in our parliamentary offices. We are not there, but the administrators are there. If there's a problem, they can just give the person information. I can be very happy. And to me, really, maybe next time we'll meet with the social development. I'm not happy at all about the 60 shelters to the whole country. You know, really, women are really suffering. What the domestic violence is like. It's like a fashion, even in our police station. You know, these police are raping these women. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I wanted to say my questions haven't been answered, but it's fine because they will continue with this. On slide 8, I think you said it, but I think for future we need either due dates or your initiatives, because if there are no timelines, I mean, normally people say you need smart objectives. So I see this as, you know, sort of objectives to say this is what we want to achieve. If we can have the dates in future to say by when, blah, blah, blah. Another thing that I wanted to talk to is maybe linked to the very costing issue. I'm worried if you've got a human resource strategy or plan, you know, that the department has come up with. Thank you.
Sure, mine was also not responded to. Maybe they didn't understand it. I was saying that because justice is linking up with education, with health and other departments, you can understand why it can't go it alone, because this is kind of a card crossing deliverable kind of department. I was in there at United Nations. Why is it that declarations are passed, treaties are signed, and but that is where things are happening. I mean, the world is controlled, they have not, the north and the south. Why don't we take up this issue like the environment people, they are green parties, who say, look, in Kimberley you dug a hole, a big hole, right? Change that yourself now. Yeah, because in Kimberley there's a big hole right in town where they dug. And it happens when I'm speaking. The other people who are speaking, there was no problem. Yeah, no, I'm saying the Green Party, the environment, climate change people, you can see they're having a big campaign about all over the world, even at the United Nations, where they say in Kimberley you extracted diamonds, you left the Kimberley people with a big hole as big as a stadium, right in town. You expect them to build houses in that hole and live in the hole. So in the future, it has happened in the past, it must never happen again. Even mining engineering, they are taught that when they design a mine, they must build into the budget the issue of after digging that hole, taking out diamonds, you must close that hole. Now I'm saying, why don't you have the same campaign as justice when, because you think that poverty is what causes domestic violence. When companies come here, maybe have a link up with the economic cluster right at the United Nations. When companies come here, they must understand their job is not just to make money. It is also to consider the people here about employment. Because if they leave us impoverished, we'll sit with this problem forever, no matter how many police are there. So I'm just saying we should lobby at United Nations, because that is where investments are happening, companies are coming all over, and raise awareness about all these problems that are there in the world. Otherwise, we're treating a symptom which we'll never treat forever. I mean, it will just perpetuate itself. Thanks, Chair.
May I start with the last question, and I apologize, I thought my colleagues would pick up on it, the last question, and go back to the broader question that was raised by Honorable Gopika. And of course, this we take it, Chair and Honorable Members, as an input, which we need to go back and engage our international relations department so that they can guide us on how to take the issue forward. But it's an issue that is exciting the way, I don't think personally I had ever thought of it that way. So it's one of those areas that we really honestly must think about in terms of lobbying. We do, as a country, in terms of our foreign policy, lobby a lot on issues of course, economic development, on issues of human rights and the like, but we had not specifically dealt with that issue in the manner that it's been suggested. So let me take it as a contribution and undertake to raise it with the Department of International Relations for them to assist us as we move forward. But we will also be thinking about how to deal with that issue. So that would be my contribution to that. But in terms of just the, other than the root cause of domestic violence being poverty, of course it's one of the many. And I said it's anecdotal, because not every person who is poor and suffers poverty feeds on others. And I think it would be too big a generalization and almost dangerous a generalization to make. But it's not excluded. And that is why I said it's somewhat anecdotal. What I think Yes, in all the causes of domestic violence, stands very strongly all these anecdotal issues of poverty, issues of unemployment, issues of HIV, lack of education, culture, customs, and all of those things. All of them put together, they have to be addressed both collectively and individually by the individual departments, which is why we are speaking to not just cluster departments, but we are also speaking outside cluster departments to ensure that we do address issues of domestic violence as well as issues of crime in broad sense. The timelines on the initiatives that we definitely have to provide and we will provide. The issues around whether we do have a human resources plan, we do have the human resources plan we believe that we can always do better. Our human resources plan has been costed, so we know those types of skills that we do not have in place and those types of skills that we do have in place. But I think we need to do slightly more than just looking at skills. We need to look at our human resources must respond to the demographics of the country, but also the topography and all of those things. Because there are places where there are just no people, and yet we have communities that live there. And so those are some of the issues that we really must deal with. And so in future engagements, we do commit that we will come back with better information in that regard. We will naturally convey the issue of, and when we provide the information, we'll provide the information on shelters, both in terms of the number and in terms of the location and the like when we provide that. But just speaking to the issue of bail, and at the risk of speaking on policy matters that perhaps my principals are going to speak to, the issue of bail is a very fundamental issue, because if you go in terms of the Constitution, of course people are presumed innocent until proven guilty, and therefore we can't necessarily always keep them in jail or in correctional facilities. Secondly, we try to keep people in correctional facilities as an absolute last resort, because one, we don't have good numbers of correctional facilities. You will understand, Honorable House, that the total number of people who are awaiting trial in correctional facilities far outstrips the number of sentenced prisoners. And so what we try and do is not to send people there when we know there is no space, because you are solving one problem, but you are creating a bigger problem for somebody else. And unfortunately, we are one country, and we have to solve the problem in a sustainable way. Having said that, and I'm not defending, but having said that, there is really a problem, and that is why when I was talking about the IJS systems, the Integrated Justice Management System, I was talking about that, where we need to start knowing who is who. Our system must tell us who is where. Now, there are real challenges, because sometimes the member of a judiciary who decides and grants that bail does not know that that person had bail a day before, or because sometimes they don't have that information readily available. I'm not saying not all the time, but it's not always readily available all the time when someone applies for bail. Remember that you can apply for bail as you come in, you can apply for bail and get it. And so we need to find a way, and the IJS system is intended to assist us with this, where when someone comes in from this process, the ICMS system, it must tell us that this is Nongulu Lego, she is who then we were looking for, and so that we are able to make a decision. And it's quite easy to point a finger at the judiciary and say they are granted bail. It does, though, happen, and I mean, we always have, clusters are not the easiest places to be, because we usually fight and disagree on most things. Particularly, bail is one of those things that we disagree on between ourselves and staff in most areas. But we agree that we have to work together to try and find sustainable solutions. So it's a challenge. We are aware of it. The police are aware of it. We are trying to find a sustainable solution towards that. Declining cases, wrong classification, I couldn't agree more. Clearly, there are wrong classifications that happen from time to time. But also, the classifications sometimes are innocently done, and sometimes there may be areas where they are not so innocent. But generally, you would say because of lack of training and all of those things. But there are certain areas where we can improve. What I think is happening now within the police environment is that the fact that they now have to document their training and report on their training to Parliament will probably, as we move forward, assist us in particularly, and maybe I'm appearing to be generalizing, but in terms of the Child Justice Act, they have to do that. It will help us in terms of understanding why are we still having this problem here, because just about everybody has been trained. But it's going to be a matter of a little bit of time before we can say this with absolute certainty. I am convinced that they are doing training because they are submitting statistics to the body that I am chairing, and so we do see that information. But it's not that easy, because it doesn't say X was trained and operates from Kronstadt, or X was trained and operates from wherever. So I think we still have to clean out that aspect in terms of how people are trained, and therefore whether we are seeing the total impact of their training when they do operate. CCTV, people still doing wrongdoing, is absolutely true, particularly in court, absolutely true. We have two types of CCTV. We have CCTVs that are meant for security, in other words, just to guard and see what's happening in and around court environment. But we also have CCTVs in environments inside court where we want to monitor certain conduct and certain behavior. So that, you recall that I had said that sometimes people give evidence in correctional facilities. They don't have to move from correctional facilities to come to court. It's those systems that we are talking about here, where people can give evidence wherever they are instead of coming here to court, because to try and mitigate against people running away or jumping whatever it is that they normally jump. So it's within that context. But is wrongdoing still happening in court? Yes, it is still happening. We have security, physical security of human beings. We have all of those things, but still it does happen. It's reducing. If you look at, perhaps we can share with this Honourable House our strategy. It's reducing the incidences, are reducing of security violations and breaches. But they are still there, and they are going to continue to be there. What we have to do is to just tighten up on a daily basis our security arrangements. LASA, we have a LASA representative chair, if you allow me to for her to respond to the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cordelia Robertson, Legal Aid South Africa. On the Honourable Member's questions, I have the following answers. Legal Aid has currently got 64 justice centres throughout the country and 64 satellite offices in more rural areas. We've got branding at courts. We also have a call centre where people can contact us and get legal advice. We also have paralegals at both justice centres and satellite offices who actually go out into the communities, and we establish links with the existing advice offices. There are very few of them left still, but that is what we do. NGOs, CBOs, ward committees, and that sort of thing. So we do have those links there as well, and people get to know us through that. Then I just received an email yesterday afternoon. We are going to have a new lot of advertisements on TV, advertising our call centre and advertising our services. That will be on TV 1, 2, 3, and I'm not sure ETV as well, but those are the three TV services we will be advertising on. We've also had a rollout at civil units at our bigger justice centres. We have a special project at the moment with estates and the master's office where there are minor children involved in estates. with respect to the number of cases we did, in the 2010-2011 financial year, we did approximately 400,000 new cases, with about 7% of that being civil work. We are hoping, with the rollout of our civil units and the special project with the estates, to actually increase that to 10%, and you can see the numbers increasing as we go along. Okay? Then, I think that is all at the moment. If you have any further questions, I'll be glad to answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't want to deprive members to respond to their stomach because that's 2 o'clock being for the house. So I'm really going to disadvantage you. I'm not taking any more hands because I'm not taking any more hands.
No.
I did not give you any opportunity to speak. I am chairing this meeting. That's how we follow proceedings in this meeting. I am saying I'm not taking any more hands, member, and you press your button. And this is not a custom yet.
Chair, I was only trying to tell you that there was no answer on answers on some of my questions, which I am entitled to the member of this committee.
Do you still have outstanding questions?
Thank you, ma'am. I think the most outstanding questions, I'm sorry, my name is Coria Kopke, okay? I'm the Director of Administration in the Office of the Director General. I'm the support to the Director General in the follow-up of the issues that will also come out of this parliamentary session. In terms of costing and budgets, now I have my old hat on because I used to work for Advocate Kambula before I went to the DG's office. In terms of costing, yes, we were also very concerned. When some of our new pieces of legislation was developed during the 1990s, in the previous, before, I think it was the second parliament, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development was never asked, as is done now, with a draft piece of legislation, come to the portfolio committee with your implementation plan and your costing. Since about early in the 2000s, we've done that. So with every piece of legislation that's gone to Parliament, we've gone with the implementation plan plus the cost, so that Parliament will know what it will cost. The Domestic Violence Act was one of the last pieces of legislation that was not cost. In fact, I've just made a note of the DG that I personally was told when I was in court services in September 1998 that the Domestic Violence Act is going to be implemented in 1999. We have to make provision, therefore, this is what the Act is going to say. And then we as the department started planning how we're going to involve that. What we just need to say is that the costing, it does not mean if the budgets that we mentioned in the reports that we gave to you, honorable member, that is not the full budget allocated to domestic violence. In each court, in each of the 385 courts, there is a domestic violence section. So there will be personnel appointed and work done and written services, and there is budgets. And what we have not done is split the budgets to say to you, so much of the budget is being allocated to domestic violence sections. It's very difficult at this point in time because of all the work that needs to be done on the vulnerable groups on the Kampula. But what we are now doing, or what we started to do with the review of the Domestic Violence Act in 2019, is with that research study, we start trying to say how much it's costing us to implement the income protection orders and the final protection orders. And that is where that amount of 38 million rand comes from. We cost in 2010 that it cost us at that point in time, without all the additional orders coming into the system, now it cost us 38 million rand through magistrate salaries, prosecutor salaries, clerk salaries, services processes, sheriff's costs, assistance to victims of crime and so forth and so forth. It cost us 38 million rand. We did not disseminate that in the budget as in the EME because of our challenges in terms of the EME. What we did do was to say we need to concentrate on making sure that domestic violence is prioritized in the department's plan and department strategy in terms of how to manage that as part of the broader gender-based violence strategy. And this is where those little bits of budget that you're seeing in the answers are coming from to see. We have received allocations from National Treasury for the implementation of legislation, everything that Advocate Kambula and her team needs to do. We received last year, we received 80 million rand. This financial year, we received 60 million rand. And next financial year, we've received 2 million rand. From that amount of money that was allocated, Advocate Kambula and her team needs to sit down and sit down with SAPS, the Legal Aid SA, the NPA, the Social Development, with the justice team and say, guys, how much money do we need to implement the Child Justice Act? I mean, take a little bit of money away. How much do we need to implement the Sexual Offences Act? Take a little bit of money away. And all that pieces of legislation then meant that in the last financial year, we allocated just under 2 million rand for domestic violence, but for a specific project to make sure that the, not for the implementation in the court, but for the implementation at the national level. We were developing the braille material, we were doing the training, we were developing the strategy, we were asking the other departments to come and report to us. So it's not the full amount of money that we are reflecting because it's difficult, but we will, as a department, we will in the future try and give you back that amount of money. I think that was what the DG. In terms of, I'm sorry, the ICMS system, the integrated case management system, was developed in 2009-10. It was piloted in this financial year, and it will be rolled out during the current financial year to all the courts.
And the last answer, Chair, relates to compensation of victims. It's always a very difficult issue. Our policy as government right now is that we do not compensate victims of domestic violence or any other victims except victims of road accident funds. And there's a specific reason for that. The South African Law Reform Commission did a research some 3 years ago, came up with a report. There are few issues that Cabinet wanted to be addressed further in the report, which is the report that asks whether there should be compensation to victims of crime, not victims of domestic violence, but victims of crime. And so there is no policy until that issue has been resolved. There isn't a formal policy whether we compensate or not. So as a result, we do not compensate. Is it ideal, though, to compensate victims of domestic violence specifically? I would hold not. And it's not because, I know when you are an accounting officer, people think that you are mean, but it's just not practical. It's just not practical. It's something that we really need to think through if we were to go the route of compensating victims of domestic violence. Generally, in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, if someone wrongs you and you suffer financial losses, you then proceed against them and or proceed against them in terms of civil law under for pecuniary damages. So that's the rate at which people can get compensation. Does it ever happen within domestic violence environment? I would argue not, because generally there's dependency between the perpetrator and the victim. And that's
where
I'd like to close.
With the permission, Chair, there was one question, I think, regarding the availability of death perigin. I want to clarify that we do have a perigin, like, for instance, Western Cape as a region. We have the number of domestic violence cases, application, matters finalized, type of the matters that can be made available if you need them. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Pardon, Chair. The withdrawal. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. About now, it's a response to the question of withdrawal. I just want to bring this gap of this the gap in the legislation. Section 18, subsection A of the legislation prescribes a provision that limits or that prohibits the prosecutors from withdrawing the charges on domestic violence. But then these charges, it's a limitation, it's a withdrawal restriction that is only focusing on one form of a charge. that is the violation of a protection order. So what it means is that if a person therefore goes to court and wants to withdraw any other charge that is related to domestic violence, that charge can be withdrawn without obtaining the permission of the of the director of prosecution or the senior prosecutor, as the case may be, varying from one province to another. So it is a big gap that is in the legislation that therefore makes it very, very difficult therefore to control the issue of withdrawal. And I also want to say that there is also another question that was relating to the police charging people with assault common instead of domestic violence. That's another gap that is in the legislation. It does not. Section 17, it lists, it creates offenses, but then it does not create an offense that is a specific offense called domestic violence. And the reason for that, what happens therefore is that when somebody goes to court and has been probably the victim of marital rape, so it's going to be charged with the statutory offense of rape. It's not going to be charged with domestic violence, and therefore that makes us therefore to lose that case if we do not capture it at the beginning. So we really need to have now this legislation. We are very happy that now it is under review, but we really need to look into that issue and ensure that we have a specific offense called domestic violence that will also help us to have a reliable statistics on domestic violence.
Thank you. Have you covered all the questions? Because I don't want now to be in conflict with my members here, and yet you are the ones who did not answer questions. You see what you have done. I want to apologize to the member because I thought she was coming up with a new question. But on a serious note, let me take this opportunity to thank the department for having, responded and also honored the invitation by the select committee jointly with the portfolio committee. This has been an educating exercise, for some of us. We have learned a lot of, issues, some of which we were not aware of, because, we always take things for granted until you come into contact with people like yourself with available information that actually dispels of the perceptions that we have. And we hope that you will send to us, the information that has been requested by members, especially with regards to the location, to the timeline, the timeline. And I hope you have noted all that. We hope we will continue, engaging you, because this is our, line of interest, especially as this portfolio committee and the select committee. So again, let me thank you and also thank the honorable members, and this meeting is adjourned.
Is anybody here from an NGO? From an NGO?
Yes.
And which one?
The Western Cape Network.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I'll come back.
Thank you.
It's quite a meeting, long.